Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue Wave Pod. I'm Soham Manik.
And I'm Eric Heffinger. And today we are going to talk with Aaron Godfrey, who is running for the Democratic candidacy in the Ohio 16th.
And the Ohio 16th is another one of these districts that is drawn remarkably. Eric, can you take us on a journey and draw a picture in our minds?
I've been told by fans of the pod that I'm basically the Bob Ross of painting gerrymandered districts into your mind. So bear with me, will you? Don't give me that look. All right, so we're starting up here at Cleveland.
A lot again, of happy little accidents.
We're starting up again west of Cleveland in the suburbs around North Olmsted, right? We're so close to the lake, we can smell the lake, but we can't touch it because, again, we're gerrymandering the lake region to someone else. So start North Olmsted, we got this box up here, and then it comes to a point, and I don't even think this thing is a mile wide at this point before it meets the rest of the district, but it's such a sliver, and then it explodes again around Strongsville, heads down through Medina County into Wayne County, has all of Wayne County because it's a very, very rural county. We're talking Amish land out there. And then we head over to Akron, but we don't touch Akron. We want to avoid that. There's too many Democratic voters there. And then we head down to Canton, but we don't pick up Canton either. We just pick up one teeny tiny sliver. I'm going to put a map up on our website at bluewavepod.com on this episode. And if you look on there, you can see this map. And I want you to pay attention around Canton. There's this little boot that pops out, just this itty-bitty sliver, and that is Timken Steel. This district was built for the current incumbent, Jim Renacci, and one of his biggest benefactors is Timken Steel. So that's why they have built themselves just into this district perfectly. It is a great example of gerrymandering.
And before the seat was actually built for Jim Renacci, Democrats were competitive in the district. It was held by a Democrat.
Only for 2 years.
In 2 years. But it was still a close race in 2010, and I think one of the problems that the
John Brocheri won this in 2008. He won with the Obama blue wave, right? And he lost his seat because he voted for Obamacare, and there was a big backlash against that around here because it is a Republican-minded area. And then in 2010, he ran against Renacci. He lost because of the health care vote. And in 2012, redistricting had already happened. So this was the first year that it was built for Renacci. And they built it so that he was up against Betty Sutton. She's now running for lieutenant governor.
And she had pretty good name recognition in 2012. She was already a representative in another district. And this was one of those districts
she's very well
that
known
were
around here.
Combined. And they had to have two incumbents run against each other. So it was actually pretty competitive in 2012.
But then Renacci won that one, close one, but he won it. And then in 2014 and 2016, it's been landslides. It was Renacci by plus 30 points.
And a lot of that was because how the district's drawn and the lack of Democrats really making a push, because why would they?
Right. So now here we are in 2018, and Jim Renacci has decided that he wanted to run for governor. Nope.
Didn't work.
Nope. Quitting that because he's going to lose. So now he's running for senator.
Hilariously. Sorry, quick side note. He decided to run for governor because he said he didn't like how D.C. worked. Now he's going to go into the Senate.
The Senate, yeah. Good luck to him on that. That's another topic. We're going back to Aaron Godfrey now.
Just a side note.
Aaron is a very, very interesting person, and he is not your typical candidate.
No, he's not. Hear from when he decided to run, he didn't know anything. He didn't have any connections.
Well, I mean, he's a physicist. He knew something.
He didn't know how the political process works when it came to running for a seat. He didn't know the first steps to take, but he just jumped in and did it. And now he's still doing it a year later.
He's doing what a lot of us were thinking. When we saw Trump get elected, it was, my God, if this guy can do it, I can do this, and I can do it a whole lot better, and I can do it to help people. And that's what he's getting into this for. He's not very polished. He's not, you know, your typical politician. But I think that's what makes his story so fascinating.
Yeah, I think he embraces that, honestly. And one of the interesting things about him is he has pretty strong progressive positions on policy, but he's running in a really red area.
If you look on his website, one of the first things you see are global warming, student loan debt, parks, minimum wage raising. I mean, those are very Bernie Sanders liberal ideas that he's putting out there as his main platforms.
And if he's going to succeed, he's going to need that Bernie type of momentum. We're talking huge ground game, catching this blue wave, hopefully, and riding it to victory in the Ohio 16th.
Mostly because he was on this podcast.
I would think so. At least two or three votes.
So stay tuned for our interview with Aaron Godfrey. We're here today with Aaron Godfrey, who is running to be the Democratic candidate of the Ohio 16th. Thanks for coming on, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
Before we start, we're just going to open the floor to you and ask, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So, like you said, my name is Aaron Godfrey. I'm running for the U.S. House in the 16th District in Ohio. I'm from a working class family. I'm the first generation college student. I got my master's in physics in 2010. And I've bounced around between jobs a little bit. Basically, I think that my story is the story of the American dream. And I think it's a dying story these days because, you know, my generation is facing a lot of troubles these days. Like, the cost of college is going up, wages have stagnated, and it's just harder and harder to get out of the circumstances of your birth. And I think that I represent a lot of this strife that the millennial generation is facing today. One thing I say pretty often on the trail is that if I were to start college today, I don't know how I would do it. Every semester is a struggle. Going to college as a poor kid who had to put myself through it is something that haunts me every day because of the student loan debt, and it's something I will never be rid of. So I think that a lot about my candidacy speaks to the frustrations of a new generation that has been victimized by our current Congress, and I think that I could be a new voice for that generation, new progressive voice to fight for the people, because we haven't had that in the 16th district in a long, long time.
Well, I can't agree with you enough at how bad student loan debt is. I mean, it is something that I know I can relate to and pretty much everyone I know can relate to. Yeah. But taking a step back, when did you actually decide to run? How did you come to that
point? Well, I've always been to some extent politically engaged ever since, really, I could blame Mr. Ashkettle, my AP government teacher at Elyria High School in 2003 or something like that. So I've always been politically engaged to some extent for basically my entire adult life. When I saw what happened in the primaries on the Democratic side and what happened in November of 2016, I just, you know, like all of us on this side of the aisle at least, just looked at the world through some shattered lens, like, what is going on? How could this happen? This is the second time a Republican president has been elected without the majority of the people behind him, to much greater consequences we all feared then and all know now. But I think what really tipped it for me was when I saw Trump's inauguration speech. It was so dark, and he had this. We all understand now he probably didn't write those words himself. It was probably a mixture of Bannon and Stephen Miller.
What were the words he used against the American chaos? Was it
carnage?
Carnage. Yeah, that's carnage. American yeah. Carnage.
And it was such a dark vision. It's like, this guy has lived in a golden plated tower his entire life, and he's talking about this carnage that he perceives on the streets of America, which I don't know that myself. I mean, there's some rough neighborhoods, sure, but like this dark version of the country he painted just, it's not matched reality as far as I and anyone else I knew saw it.
My favorite part about that speech is apparently George W. Bush after it said that some weird shit.
Oh, good. We can swear. That's good to know.
Hey, the president can do it.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. But that kind of pushed me over the ledge. And so basically January 20th, 2017 is when I decided to run. I didn't pay much heed to who else was considering running at the time, because I thought at the end of the day, I knew what I wanted to represent and where I come from and the voice I would be giving to the people. So I thought, win or lose, I understand it's a huge, huge thing to jump into, especially coming from a completely different field of physics. But I wanted to get out there as soon as I could, start meeting people as soon as I could, because at least, you know, like I say, I got my master's in physics. I always tell people, apply to necessary stereotypes. I'm not used to talking to people without a PowerPoint behind me and some graphs. If you guys saw me early on the trail, you know I've come a long way in my ability to speak. So
when you were jumping into this, was there anybody there to help you at the beginning? Did you have any aid at all? Was there any kind of groups like Run for Something is a group out there that's trying to help encourage and find people's support and whatnot? Did you have anything?
Yeah, or even
that?
Party support? Or
not really. And so one of the problems in the 16th district is it's basically forgotten by everyone because it's drawn so ridiculously. It was drawn specifically for Jim Renacci. That being that as it may, people don't normally look at this race as competitive. Right now, this year is considered competitive because, first off, Jim Renacci is retiring, so he was going to lose in the gubernatorial race. Now he's going to lose in the Senate race instead. But
as it should be.
Yeah, exactly. But there's no incumbent this time. And so we're considered competitive, even though it is considered a plus eight Republican district.
Right. The Cook Report has it up as a very likely Republican, but it's still listed as one of the few across the country that could possibly be flipped.
And realistically, in Ohio, we may, if we can flip any district in Ohio, we're probably limited to two or three realistically. So party resources, what they are, they have to pick and choose. And I can't really blame them for not really being full behind us, especially as early as I got into it. But to go back to your question, as I digress endlessly, there wasn't a whole lot of support. I just decided I'm going to run. I'm going to start going to these Democratic meetings, introduced myself to the first time. I think it was either West Shore or West Lake. Stammered my way through with my heart beating out of my chest, and just went from there. And now I've got like a campaign team and everything. So it's come along slowly but surely. But I think I'm reaching people and making my voice heard.
Absolutely. I find it incredibly fascinating because I think after 2016, everyone, and we've mentioned this multiple times, people talk about getting involved, and no one really knew what that meant. And some people, you know, you heard all the time.
I mean, we threw around the ideas, should we run? What do we run for? Like, we played with it.
And yeah. I think I remember Obama's speech, his farewell speech, I think, where he even came out and said, you know, you should run for something if you don't know what to do. And a lot of people had that inclination. And I don't think a lot of people had the guts to actually go through with it. So I want you to take us back to that first day or that first week. You've decided to run. You've told people about it. You went through the internal struggle in your head. You've made the decision. What do you do? What are the first steps you take to kind of build a team, build a base, get your name out there?
Well, it took a long time for me to build a team. And even now I'd say it's more of a skeleton team because, you know, the fundraising here is a situation of its own. And so my team is all volunteer. But when I first started to get my name, wanted to get name recognition out there. So let me take you back to the first time I really got any kind of attention or support from anyone. The City Club of Cleveland in May, I think it was. Maybe it was April or March or something like that. Sometime early in 2017, Bernie Sanders came to speak. And I got the chance to ask the first question. I don't know how that happened, but by some stroke of luck. And I asked him, what does someone like me with no political connection, what do I do to get my name out there? What do I do to win this, to win the primary and win in the general? And his answer is something I've taken seriously ever since and have been running with. Grassroots. Get your name, like, just meet people. That's the best thing you can do. Talk to the grassroots organizations. Talk to everyone you can. Get the support from people early on, and get those boots on the ground, because that's going to make all the difference when game time comes. So that's kind of been where I started at and where I've been going ever since. The grassroots to me are very important, and I think we'll probably just touch on this a little bit later, but I think this is going to be a huge part of how we can win in a district like the 16th.
And before getting to that, question for you, because you mentioned it when you were talking about how you made the decision to run. You mentioned that you were really affected by the primary on the Democratic side. How so?
I'll touch on it briefly, but I'd like to avoid the discussion. I shouldn't have brought it up at the beginning because I'd like to avoid it because it was a fracturing event for the left. And I supported Bernie Sanders, and at the end of the day, I voted for Hillary Clinton. And I think if you really cared about this country, that's what you did, because we all saw Trump and we all saw what he represented. But I voted for Bernie, and I think that a lot of people who supported him, we saw what happened in the primaries and were very disillusioned by it. But I didn't let it stop me from running as a Democrat. I decided I wanted to run as a Democrat to be someone from the progressive wing of the party that ran as a Democrat to bring the two wings of the party together, because ultimately, whatever the progressives think they have going on, we can't work outside of the frame of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has historically been a party of the working class and the downtrodden and what have you. And that is something that the progressives fight for every day. And it's easier to become a part of the party and make it work for us than to go out there and make our own. Because if we split the vote, if we keep splitting the vote, we get more Republicans in Congress and town hall and city halls and everywhere down the ballot. And that is unacceptable in these days.
How do you do that on a policy level? So you still want to be a strong progressive, but you want to appeal to a broader population, right? Including moderate Republicans who are fed up with what's happening. How do you do that on a policy level? Do you moderate your policies? Do you keep them progressive and try to just make the argument?
So my stance here might actually rustle some jimmies, because I haven't tried to moderate anything at all. My entire thing is I'm doing this to be – I am of the people, and that's who I plan to represent in D.C. As what the Democratic Party has historically stood for, I assume that is going to be acceptable to some extent. We have – throughout the last – throughout my entire life, I'll say the Democratic Party has always been the party where dissent is allowed, where you can go to DC and you can have your own voice. That's why Obamacare was such a struggle to get through, because we had all these competing ideas and people who were just trying to do right by the people in their home districts. And the Republican Party is in what it toes the line. As far as I'm concerned, if you're a Democrat, you're not expected to. And I would hope that my fellow congressmen, if I'm elected, respect that I want to represent the people here. Like I respect their desire to represent their people.
When you're out there and you're talking to people and you're telling them about your policy decisions, like you said, you're not covering them up. You're going full on out there with them. How are they reacting to this in such a Republican leaning district? What are the reactions?
I generally, people react pretty well. I think that they can tell I'm one of the things that I think Bernie had going for him. I keep going back to Bernie. I don't mean to, but people liked his authenticity, and that's the kind of thing I'm going for. I have no reason to lie. I have everything to lose in this. I'm not a wealthy businessman. I don't have stocks or anything else. So the way I see it is I have no reason to lie to anyone, so why would I? So I'm just going out there and being honest, and people, I think, can tell, and they've been receptive to that. And I think that makes a big difference, and I think that's something every Democrat, at least in Ohio, should be running on, because that's how we're going to win in the gerrymandered district, is authenticity.
So it's been about a year or so since you decided to run. So what is campaigning like now? What kind of events are you going to? What kind of people are you meeting?
Well, it's basically, I feel like I have two full-time jobs, because I do still have a full-time job. So basically life is work, gym, work. I feel bad for my dog more than anything else. I'm still going around making the rounds at all the Democratic clubs I can. I'm hosting my first fundraiser at the end of this month, actually, in Parma, if you guys want to go. but there was a weird kind of dynamic at first where I was running for 2018 at the beginning of 2017 when all the party infrastructure was like, dude, chill out. We have to worry about 2017 first.
Right.
So, like, it felt inappropriate to do a lot of events or fundraisers or anything like that before the 2017 elections were over, because I didn't want to take away from those elections, because the local elections are just as important as anything else. I may be jumping into the deep end, but that isn't necessarily what I recommend for everybody.
So we're going to talk about sort of the challenges in a bit and want to get your opinion on that.
It's a big one. Yeah. It's a big challenge.
But, yes. But before we do that, I want to hear, now that we are in 2018... how do you envision this campaign going for the rest of the year? I mean, you know, all things going well, how do you see it in your head?
Well, I guess I don't really know where to start with that question. It's going to, like I alluded to earlier, is it's going to come down to having a strong ground game in my position. Like, to me, the Democratic primary is going to be about who can raise the most money. That's who's going to get the initial support of the Ohio Democrats, I'm sure. But whoever can organize the best ground game, knock on the most doors, and get your name out there the best, that's who's going to make the real difference. And
are you knocking on doors?
It's been a little bit too cold.
It's been negative 20.
it's been pretty awful, but we have that on the schedule. We have this date we're going to start regardless of the weather, and we're going to be doing this every weekend from that point on. So right now I'm trying to apply for endorsements and whatnot, mm-hmm. because as far as I'm concerned, if I can get the grassroots on my side and I get their boots on the ground for me, in addition to whatever volunteers I've met along the way who are willing to help out, then that will give me the army of boots, if you will, that will lead us to victory in the primary. And that same, those same boots and how they grow from May through November will be what lead us to victory in November, as far as I'm concerned. I won't be able to afford, no matter what, no matter who wins this primary, we're not going to be able to afford the TV ads that Republicans and all their dark money can get them. So what's going to make the difference to me is knocking on doors, meeting people, especially myself, face-to-face, because when they see them a relatable person, I've known what it's like to be laid off, and I've known what it's like to not know how I'm going to pay for my bills next month. That's going to be the connection we need to blur and delete the party line so we can get moderate Republicans on our side.
We're not going to talk about the competitors right now, because honestly, a lot of the names going up in the Democratic primary are in and out, and I don't really know who to take seriously at this time that are going up against you. But in the Republicans, there are two main people that are standing out. I mean, this is, if you win the primary in May, you go on against either Anthony Gonzalez or Christina Hagan, it looks like.
Yeah.
And these are two very, they're going two different routes. Christina Hagan is going full Trump mode. Seb Gorka was just here doing events for her. I mean, they're really
Man,
trying.
I hate and on, yeah, me too. And on Twitter, Anthony Scaramucci has said he would campaign with her as well.
Wow, joy! They're all coming to town.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't mind the Mooch coming around.
Well, we'll see if we can get him on the pod.
On the, pod.
The other option is that Anthony Gonzalez gets the nomination, and Anthony Gonzalez actually hasn't said.
Or
anything,
done anything.
Anything at yeah. all? Like, I haven't heard a single thing from him.
Other than he's raising money in California, not Ohio.
He's raised a lot of it.
Yeah, but as far as I know, Timken's full-on behind Hagan, and this district was drawn for Timken.
Well, Timken has been raising money for Gonzalez, I was just reading.
I thought they were behind Hagan. Oh.
So, maybe both. Maybe they're hedging their bets.
Yeah. Just looking at the list of people that have, you know, it just seems like facing the juggernaut.
Peyton Manning has been here. A.J. Hawk, football players. Jimmy Haslam.
Owner of the Browns.
The Smucker's family is raising money for him. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Owners of Jam.
In the one quarter that he raised money, he raised $600,000.
Yeah.
Just in one quarter. I mean, I don't know what his numbers are now. That was in September when he turned that in. It's got to be $1 million already.
I'm sure it's way more than a million. I'm sure he's probably broached $2 or $3 million by now.
It's ridiculous. What Dem can ever compete with that?
And that's why I say that the Dems are short-sighted if they're just going to back whoever raises the most money, because that's not what it's going to come down to. And I think Bernie taught us that. Obama taught us that in 08. It's not for us, it's not going to be about money. It's going to be about enthusiasm generated by the voters, about how much we can reach out to the voters and inspire them to come out and support us and do work for us. Because like I said, we're not going to be able to raise I know there's a $1 million race, and I know that everyone in any level of power within the party has told me, if you can't raise $1 million, you're not in this race. I'm like, well, I mean, you say that, but like, I'm a guy who's been living paycheck to paycheck my entire life, so I like to think I could make the most out of whatever I can get to be as effective as possible. And that's what it's going to come down to, not radio ads or anything else, but being able to supply door knockers with the materials they need to get the word out on the ground. Because, like I said, that's going to be how we win this. It's not going to be about money raised. I can tell you right now, I don't have $1 million in the bank. So if that's the bar the Democrats put up for participation in this race, then we're on our own. And honestly, going into this race, I kind of expected it to be that way anyways, because of the nature of the district and because of this history. But I'd like some support if I could get it. But if that's the bar they set, we're just not going to get it. So,
what would you like to make a plug here on where they can donate if they do want to help?
Sure, you can go to www.godfreyforcongress.com. GODFREY. Click the big donate button.
That's a good idea. We should have one of those.
Yeah.
Man, I need one of those. Yeah,
curious about it. So you mentioned giving people the materials that they need to go out there and talk to people. What are those materials? I mean, if it's issues that they're talking about, mm-hmm. what types of issues? I mean, are you focusing on the national issue to try to rile people up to kind of catch that blue wave when people are frustrated with what's happening in D.C.? Are you focusing on local issues that people care about?
To me, it's about the big picture issues. That's why I'm running federal, because these are the big picture issues that have affected every part of my life, and I'm sure have affected your lives too, like climate change, student loan debt, healthcare, all these things that have had a huge impact on our life and Congress just doesn't care about or take action on. For them, is what makes me richer and preserves status quo so I can keep getting richer. Or, you know, maybe that's just my cynical view of it, but that sure as hell seems to be the way it works out. I just think the government should be working for the people and not the corporations. It should be protecting us from exploitation, providing certain necessary services for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I don't think that's that radical myself.
Well, before we wrap this up, I want to ask you a question. We're trying to encourage people to run. We're trying to find the best way to run by talking to very diverse and different candidates. Is there any advice that you would have for somebody that's thinking about going out there and doing it for the first time? That's something you've learned along the way that you think people should know about?
So I might be a bad example, because my mentality is usually, I can deal with it. I know that I have the faculties to recover whether or not it works out. But I would just say, just do it. Nothing's going, like, I don't know how, I'm not from a connected family. My dad was a truck driver. My mom delivered newspapers and ran a cleaning business. I have no political connections. So when I decided to do it, I just thought, I'm just going to go out there and start meeting people. As far as I'm concerned, that's the only way to do it. When I decided I wanted to learn how to swim, I went to the rec center, jumped in the dive well, and decided I didn't want to die that day. So that's kind of the mentality I took with running for office. I'm just going to do it.
Dive right in.
Yeah, basically. And it's worked out for me so far. I think if you're passionate, if you have the energy, I think it will work out for you too. But just do it. Whether it's city council, dog catcher, congressman, state rep, just do it.
I think it's incredibly commendable that you felt a calling and just did it. You're facing a Goliath of proportions in the fall, but we're so excited to see what happens. We hope you can come back and talk to us and anytime. Update us on how it goes.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what a story that was.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy.
And what a great example of somebody who just got frustrated with everything that's going on and said, I'm throwing my hat in the ring and I don't care if it looks like I'm going to lose or if I don't have enough money. I'm just going to do it and I'm going to ride this wave and see if I can make something magical happen.
And he seems to be running for all the right reasons.
Absolutely. I mean, you can tell it's not about the power for him at all. It's not about the money. It's really about just trying to do some good. And that's extremely commendable.
This is not going to be an easy battle for him. When we talked in the episode, we talked about David and Goliath. And I think this is, I mean, in the biblical story, David won. I don't know if David can win here. I mean, the gerrymandered district, a guy with no name, no money, against a guy that has so much name recognition and so much money.
Well, let me give you some quick numbers just to put it in context. I think we briefly mentioned this, but just to clarify it. Anthony Gonzalez, at the end of September in 2017, raised $626,000. Aaron Godfrey, in the same period, raised $2,100.
Yeah, it's severe.
That's a pretty big gap.
And I know money's not everything when you've got momentum, but you still need cash because you got to get your name out there. You got to get the flyers. You've got to get on some TV. I mean, you got to get people's attention somehow so your name is out there. And I don't know how you do that right now.
Well, there are people that have broken the mold, right, in that. And I think it's true. Bernie's a great example. Even Trump's not a bad example in terms of not raising a ton of money.
I mean, he had the name recognition, though.
He had the name recognition. And the question is, can you do that on a smaller level? It's kind of easier to do it when you have the national name recognition and can get the $17 from everywhere. But what about in the single district?
I mean, let's compare him to Ken Harbaugh, who we talked in the first episode. Ken, I mean, people don't know him. He's not a household name, but he has quite a resume, right? And we didn't talk money on his episode, but he has outraised his incumbent opponent every quarter that's happened, which is crazy because Bob Gibbs brings in a lot of money.
It's pretty unheard of. And that is the kind of thing that I think raises eyebrows around the country.
But he's polished, right? He looks like, he talks like he's been doing this for a long time. Whereas Aaron doesn't talk that way. He's not your stereotypical politician. Is that what the people are looking for in this election? Are they looking for the authentic candidate? Or are they looking for that polished guy that they think can ride in on a white horse and save the day?
Well, that's why I'm really excited to talk to him again in a couple months. He's going to really start campaigning now, isn't he? He's going to start going door, once, you know, it's not negative 50 degrees outside. He's going to start going door to door. And I think that's when we'll see whether there's actually a movement
there. Negative 50 was an exaggeration. When I said in the interview negative 20, that wasn't an exaggeration. Those are some very cold days.
With the wind chill.
That was a wind chill, yes. It's it's not that cold right now. Come to Cleveland. It's tropical sometime in the year. So when it gets warmer, yeah, I would love to talk to him again and see really what the reception is as he goes door to door and talks to these Republican voters.
So thanks for listening. As always, please subscribe on iTunes. You can find us on SoundCloud, and you can find us on our website at www.bluewavepod.com.
Before we go, I also want to say, on bluewavepod.com, on this episode, I posted the video of Aaron talking to Bernie Sanders and asking him his question. So if you'd like to see that video, and you'd like to see what the district looks like, please go to our website, and please share us with your friends. And if you could, hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, and let us know some other candidates that we should be talking to.